This episode of Stir Fry's Stochasticity is brought to you by our faithful organic non-primate companions, the dogs, and their unique philosophy. Dog philosophy. If it's not food, toy, or friend, it's a toilet. Good indeterminate time of day, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, canines and felines and babies of all somatypes. Recently I read something that interested me, and then irritated me. Various science-related news outlets had just reported that researchers from Brigham Young University had demonstrated that babies are born understanding dog language, or something like that. As you could probably guess from the handle I use for my secret identity here on the internet, this interested me. Epicanus is a mashup of the famous, supposedly hedonistic ancient Greek philosopher Epicurus, the word canis meaning dog, and Plato's famous syllogism about dogs being philosophers. And before someone of advanced erudition points it out, yes, I'm aware that Epicurus and Plato were Greek while canis is Latin. However, I think Epicanus sounds better than Epicinus. And yes, scholars of ancient Greek are welcome to correct my pronunciation. While the babies and dogs stories described an interesting study, I couldn't help but notice that the stories looked an awful lot like barely edited press releases from the university. High on upbeat summary, but low on content. And with a headline that made the whole thing sound silly rather than scientific. Science Daily, for example, titled the story, quote, "Babies Understand Dogs, Bark Matching Study Finds," unquote. Their story did mention that they were testing babies' ability to match up aggressive and non-aggressive dog pictures with types of dog barks, but doesn't go into any real detail. I'm a longtime fan of This Week in Science Radio and Netcast show, and having listened for years now, I suspected I knew what co-host Justin Jackson's response to the story would be, so I decided to check. See, when I'm not sitting here in my spandex lab coat and science goggles fighting intellectual crimes, I appear in my alter ego as a mild-mannered computer nerd. So, using my computer nerd skills, I hacked into the computer used by the robot overlords that I'm convinced are secretly controlling Mr. Jackson. I found their Justin Jackson simulator that they used to fine-tune the framing of their messages to the unsuspecting public, and fed it the story. The results of this simulation come out something like this. That sounds interesting, but they don't say how many babies they tested or what their testing criteria was. Maybe a bunch of the babies came from families that already had dogs, so, like, they learned how to associate angry dog barking with angry dog faces when they were inevitably mauled by the family dog, but before the family cat blinded them by giving them toxoplasmosis. Now, since I don't actually know what parameters the robot overlords use when running the Justin Jackson simulator, my simulation results are probably just a little bit different than what the real Justin Jackson would actually say. Even so, aside from the anti-cuddly organic non-primate companion propaganda, there are some legitimate concerns in there. The stories give us nowhere near enough detail to judge whether the study's methodology or the author's interpretation of their results were full of crap or not. Worse yet, as usual, and much to my increasingly severe irritation, they never bothered to cite the actual study in question so I could go look it up. Which brings me to why I am recording this. There are plenty of people reporting on scientific press releases, but very few who report on the actual studies themselves, and there's only so much This Week in Science and the Nature and Science magazine's weekly shows can cover. Somebody should do something about that. Being a big nerd who actually reads scientific papers for fun, I felt it was a moral imperative to try to help. I managed to locate and obtain a copy of the paper in question, and here, in summary, is what's in it. First, here's where you'll find the actual study, in case you want to see if I am full of crap when I describe it. It appears in Volume 45, Number 4 of the journal Developmental Psychology, on pages 1143 to 1151. The study is entitled, quote, "Infants' Intermodal Perception of Canine, Canis Familiaris, Facial Expressions and Vocalizations," unquote. The authors are Ross Flom, Heather Whipple, and Daniel Hyde. For those of us who went to public school, the title means that the study is about babies' ability to connect the sound of dog barks with the sight of a dog's facial expression. You might think this is a pretty bizarrely random thing to test, but it's actually a reasonable extension of previous research. The paper's introduction discusses previous relevant research, citing numerous studies showing infants' innate abilities for recognizing both human and non-human primate faces and even face-shaped drawings from an early age, for recognizing the sound of human speech patterns, perhaps even before being born, and being able to associate facial expressions with vocalizations in both humans and non-human primates. The general trend of all these previous studies is that babies seem to be born with remarkably capable, but not very precise, ability to recognize communication from facial expressions and voices, which rapidly becomes more specialized as they get older. Simply, as they get older, they tend to lose the ability to recognize languages that they don't hear much, or faces of the types that they aren't continually exposed to, while getting increasingly precise in their ability to interpret language and facial expression that they're exposed to all the time. This study is actually attempting to confirm findings in a previous study, which seemed to show that younger babies could correctly tell which videos of monkey faces went with which kinds of monkey sounds. The hypothesis being tested in this study is, quote, human infants perform cross-species intersensory matching of faces and vocalizations, unquote. The authors chose to test this hypothesis with dogs, which are known to have a range of facial and vocal expressions that are recognizable by at least adult humans, and which have been co-evolving with human populations for tens of thousands of years now. To spoil the punchline, I'm not a developmental psychologist, but to me it looked like they did a very solid job of testing and supporting this hypothesis. Now I'm going to describe what they actually did. If this bores you, skip ahead to about the 9:08 mark for the executive summary. The authors selected infants who were 6, 12, 18, and 24 months old, who lived in homes with no dogs, and whose parents reported little or no exposure to dogs, specifically less than 20 minutes per month of exposure of any kind. 32 infants at each age were tested. For this test, the authors had pictures of two dogs' heads and upper bodies. One picture of each dog showed them in an aggressive facial expression, and the other in a non-aggressive pose. The babies were first shown the pictures by themselves to see if they had a preference for one or the other from sight alone. Then, the babies heard either an aggressive or non-aggressive bark for 2 seconds, and then were shown the two dog pictures. A researcher listening to an iPod so they couldn't hear which bark it was, and standing behind the picture display so they couldn't see which picture was which, recorded how long the infant spent looking at each picture. The test was then repeated with the other bark. Half of the babies saw one dog's picture, and half the other, and half of the babies heard the aggressive bark first, and the other half heard the non-aggressive one first. Finally, the authors threw out data from any baby that were either too busy throwing a tantrum or sucking on their toes or whatever they do to notice the pictures, or who spent 90% or more of their time looking at just one picture in case it was just because they didn't notice the other one. Additionally, the authors made note of which picture was looked at first, regardless of how long they looked. Finally, they took their numbers and went home to play with their calculators. It's probably worth mentioning that the authors also cite several references for their test methodology as well, so it's not as though they're using some exotic and unproven form of test. The results? The youngest babies showed a real and statistically solid preference for looking at the picture of the dog whose expression matched the type of barking that went with it, although which picture they looked at initially didn't seem to correlate. The older ones seemed to lose the preference for looking at the matching dog, but they showed a statistically solid tendency to look first at the dog with the bark-matching expression, while having a small but again statistically solid preference for looking at the non-matching dog, suggesting to me at least that perhaps the older infants still recognize the voices and expressions, but their more developed brains are more interested in the novelty of the non-matching dog. Wondering perhaps why there's a happy-looking dog standing there while they're listening to an angry bark. Now, for those of you too busy doing the accounting on your huge salaries, bonuses, and stock options to have paid attention through that whole explanation, here's a summary. This study really is a logical continuation of previous studies on babies' abilities to associate voices and faces and what they communicate, and how this ability develops as they get older. The study's authors appear, at least to me, to have been very careful in selecting their test subjects and designing and controlling their study's procedures, which test the hypothesis that babies are able to associate the facial expressions and vocalizations of dogs. The evidence from this study's results appear to support this hypothesis. So, infants do seem to, quote, perform cross-species intersensory matching of faces and vocalizations, unquote. QED. I'd like to conclude with a couple of apologies and a pathetic bid for attention. Actually, this entire recording is a pathetic bid for attention, but I mean an explicit one. First, a quick apology to Science Daily for picking on them, even though they were just one of many places I saw with the same presentation of the story. Science Daily just happens to be the one specific site that I remember seeing it on. Secondly, an apology to Mr. Justin Jackson. I really am a longtime fan of This Week in Science, and although I was presumptuous with his name in this recording, the truth is that compared to him and senior This Week in Science host Dr. Kirsten Sanford, I am not worthy to so much as watch the feed from the webcam pointed at the waste basket wherein crumpled pieces of paper are discarded during the show. Dr. Sanford and Mr. Jackson, should either of you happen to ever hear this, keep up the good work. And please don't sue me. Besides, if Mr. Jackson was really working for the robot overlords, the killbots would have been here by now to silence me before word got out. Finally, I'm making this recording to try to satisfy an urge to be productively useful in the cause of science. What I have in mind is to hunt down actual scientific papers, and then record reports somewhat like this one that summarize what the actual paper says, and perhaps why anyone should care. Since just how productively useful this project is will depend directly on how many people I can interest in listening, I'm desperate for some guidance on what would make this more enjoyable for anyone hearing this. When you have a chance, please point your browser at bigroom.org/stirfry. And let me know if you might enjoy something like this, and how I can adjust it to make it more interesting to you. I'm calling this amateurish recording Stir-Fried Stochasticity, Episode 1. I'm recording in here. What do you want?
You have been injured to robot overlords. She must be punished.
Okay, bye everybody.